and they have to say something. So most of them, I think, are.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Just want to start by saying the mandate of the Portfolio Committee also, as representing Parliament, is to act as the voice of the people, especially in fulfilling constitutional functions of passing laws and overseeing the aggressive actions. Public participation to us as Parliament is a central constitutional imperative that is accorded and enshrined by the committee. Following the presentation of the bill last year by the Minister to us, and having received some of your comments, that is written comments, we as the Committee on Economic Development saw it prudent that we conduct public hearings as part of the process of finalizing the bill. The public hearing process to us is an effort by ourselves to obtain as much external input as possible, which we feel will ensure that at the end Parliament passes laws that are of quality and of most effective. We want to say all issues that are coming from or out of this hearing and also out of your written submission will be considered by the committee in its engagement with the department, in particular minister, as he's the one who tables the bill. the inputs we believe will also present to us the committee will present to us an independent verification or as an independent verification or source against which to measure the official data and information presented by the department. I think we saw that throughout the past 2 days. That is why then we would want to take the opportunity on behalf of our committee to welcome all of those who are going to be making oral presentation or submissions to us today. We want to welcome you and assure you that your input to this process is highly considered. We have received so far 28 written submissions, and we've managed also to get interest to make oral submissions of about 31 interested parties. But so far, at least 4 have since withdrawn because of various reasons. We have the process that we're going to be following. But first of all, I would request all of you to switch off your cell phones or rather put them on silent so that they don't disturb our proceedings. Second, I would want also to indicate to those who will be making presentations that you have 30 minutes. For a total of 30 minutes for both your presentation, which is up to 15 minutes, and the other 15 minutes will be for Q&A. We are appealing to you to make the most of this, of your presentation, by also indicating to us as much as we want to hear your critiquing of the bill. We also want you to help us on possible solutions or areas where you feel you'd want to make amendments to the bill, because we are here on your behalf, and hence we called you to assist us to a working or workable legislation here. I'm hoping also that you have managed to go through the object of the bill so that as you make your presentation, we don't spend more time, you know, trying to clarify to you what are those the objects of the bill, because what we discovered from the past 2 days that people haven't really read through and understood the purpose of the bill. Let's once more welcome you all and wish you the best in your presentation. But to those who haven't seen us yet, may we wish you the best of 2014. We hope it will be the best year for you. But above all, we hope that we all going to work hard for this game, trying to change the lives of the people. So on behalf of this team, we want to welcome you all. And to members also, thank you for really availing yourselves for this morning. Also, and for your continuous support and participation. The first presenter for today will be from South Africa, South Devon Community Environmental Alliance. Desmond Decker. Is that okay? He's the office coordinator and the intervention project officer. Since you're meeting us for the first time, it's really also important before you comment that we introduce ourselves. Starting with myself, my name is Shulala Coleman, the chairperson of the committee. I'll start with the beautiful ladies here next to us. That's Mayor Van Mohorosi, who's a member representing the ANC in the committee. Next to her is Mayor Kili, also representing the ANC in the committee. On the next bench, at the back, I see the Muhai, representing the ANC. Just in front of him is Mr. Van der Westhuizen, representing the DA. Next to him is Mr. Mdau, representing the DA also. And just next to him also would be the whip of the committee representing the ANC, Mr. Ntuli. Behind him is Mr. Mavasa, representing the ANC. Next to him is Mr. Bukman, representing the ANC. And then the young gentleman with the maroon tie is Mr. Gwangwa, representing the UDM. I must also indicate that we have apologies from other members, both from the ruling party and also from other opposition parties. We also have COPE, we have IFP, we have IG, and ACGP in the committee. They have since sent apologies. Mr. Disa, may you please give us your presentation, but then by introducing yourself. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning to the Portfolio Committee on Economic Development and Chair, members of the Portfolio Committee. My name is Desmond Desa, and my colleague on my right is Samita Bechon, with the project at the South Durban Community Environmental Alliance in Durban. The city, as we call it, South Durban, in short, CTC, is an environmental justice organization based in South Durban. We have a number of affiliate organizations that makes up the city since its formation. And the presentation I'm going to present today is informed by public meetings, public workshops, and also within the organization. I think anybody wants to read more about us, you can go to our website, sdcea.co.za. But there's newsletters as well as other information that's available. Firstly, let me start off with regarding the infrastructure bill. For us as communities in South Durban, this infrastructure bill has come as a shock. It's come as a shock because similar to the rezoning plans that were presented to us in July 2013, last year, the documents were presented by the Green Municipality, and then we had a later document and we had presentations by the Planning Commission of the province. Now this has come as a shock to us, similar to that, because the documents are known in the library. And despite our efforts in Durban to engage with government, we had the Minister of Finance, Robin Gordon, come to Durban and address hundreds of us in community meetings. We had the Minister of Enterprise, Lucy Gigaba, come to Durban and address hundreds of people in meetings in regard to infrastructure and development around port expansion, around the five routes. When one looks at the scanty documentation in English, the majority of people in South Durban, predominantly 90% are Zulu speaking. We have to fight to get their language changed into Zulu. And even then, the documents have not been forthcoming from government. We had a commitment from the mayor of Durban, Tim Pumalo, In regard to a probe step that government indicated that they want to set up, which was agreed by Pravin Gordhan and Muluzi, we held a meeting at the Muslim Abidjan Conference Center. At that meeting, it was agreed that the stakeholder forum would be a bottom-up approach of developing policy and of developing the vision for the people of South Durban will be developed together with people. That hasn't happened up until now. There's been no consultation, no coming back to the communities at all. I suppose we're waiting for the election to come back to us. The tests that have been presented are like fake the company. This will be the third time that people in South Durban... Sorry.
Is that the
point of order?
Chairperson, I'm just want to get maybe some guidance from the chair in terms of the presentation. Are we discussing the bill? Or what is the issue at hand?
Thanks, Mr. Christman, but I thought I was still going to get a sense of the presentation because I'm still in the process of getting this. And then I can then rule also. Thank you. You can continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Giving a background of the information before I come to the presentation.
Be mindful of time, though.
Yeah, mindful of
time. Yes, because we want to engage on the
Yes. Okay. So what is our concern? So I'm giving you a background on where we are, and bearing in mind that this bill will affect hundreds of thousands of people in South Durban, right? With the development that will take place once the bill is passed. It means that many of us who have been products of forced removal, this will impact on us again, once again, for the third time in some cases. The infrastructure bill does not take into consideration our concerns as a community. The people will be suffering the most. With regard to the port expansion, I'll give you a background of the whole thing. There's a huge port expansion. They're talking about the dugout ports, the logistic parks. Nothing of this gives us a sense that this bill will be consultative, will go back, has been discussed with us, absolutely nothing. When one looks at all the information coming through, the bill, that undermines everything that's coming through, that has been forthcoming since. Public participation has been very minimal, and I know already through the media and already a lot of stuff come out of this committee saying that it has been public participation, but the minister and his department has never engaged once with us on this bill. There's been no consultation in Durban that I'm aware of. The minister in South Durban has come to the people in Durban and spoken about it. Absolutely nothing. There's been no time frame set up. The first time that we knew about this bill was advertised, and we got to Parliament. We actually engaged Parliament to get here. To represent so many thousands of people. I don't even know if some of them know whether we are representing them. The documents that we had to look through, what informs that bill? We haven't had sight of the documents that inform the bill itself. For us to make serious comments on it.
Can you expand on that? What do you mean by saying a document informing the bill?
Well, the bill is there, right? Draft bill. They asked for comment. What bill, what documentation, consultation, what documentation?
Sorry. I just want to make it clear to you, this is not a draft bill, it's a bill that's presented to Parliament. The draft form, we were informed by the department and the minister that has been consulted on to arrive at this final bill. So to us, it's a bill presented for you to be able to critique and do it. But take us to critique. Take us to the actual clauses or sessions that you feel are not representative enough and give us solutions. What you feel would be best, put.
Yeah, I'll come to that, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that. The draft bill and whatever pending documents or information that informs the draft bill, we haven't seen that. We haven't been compulsive of all that. That's what I'm trying to bring to attention of the committee. I also want to say that there's been no public hearings in the area, in our communities in South Durban. And in Durban as a whole as well. I haven't seen your site. And we are a foremost organization on EIA. We are known to the department, the various departments in Durban. But nobody's consulted with anyone. We are engaging with government at different levels. We've engaged with Malusi, we've engaged with Pravin Gordhan, we've engaged with the mayor in Durban. But we haven't seen site of documentation that was informing this bill, whether it's been consultation, whether it's been input. and we've gone to the IDP meeting, but nothing's been discussed even there in the IDP meeting. So I don't know how this bill has come into Parliament. Safe to say that the, as people in government, we've not been consulted. No. We think the bill itself is pushing an agenda of looking at the fossil carbon dependence. And yet we've had huge problems with the industry in South Durban where people are huffing on account of the fossil carbon dependence, where it's pushing the whole issue of, you know, this is how it has to be done. We want to get to that, and the way to get to that is to have it at that table. We don't believe that's the one. We think that there's a huge expansion in Durban that's taking place that's impacting upon people, impacting on people's livelihoods. And the bill is not, because it hasn't been informed properly, because civil society and affected people have not been informed, have not been consulted about the bill. The bill is written in a way that says that economic development at all costs, even if it destroys livelihoods. There's 12,000 fisher folks in Durban that depends on fishing as a livelihood. And the sand banks in Durban have been destroyed because economic development goes on to it and destroy all the nurseries in Durban. And yet the bill talks about economic development, but it doesn't talk of, it doesn't give us insight of the repercussions, the impacts that this will have. The bill doesn't take into consideration that these strategic infrastructure projects are going to cause huge impacts with climate, with the different currents in the sea and all that sort of thing. And I sit on the amendments of the EIA, Amendment 6. And just at the last, we've been sitting on 3 years on the EIA amendments in Pretoria with the Department of Environmental Affairs. I'm sitting on that committee and we've been drafting all the amendments and working together. And only at the last minute did the head of the amendment of the department come to a meeting and say, well, we want the amendment so that it synchronizes with the infrastructure bill. And that was about 2 or 3 months ago that I heard about it. And we never had any consultation. Safe to say that they want to ensure that the amendment on the EIA is in synchronized with this bill so that the EIA is weakened and allows that the draft infrastructure bill to have no problems with it. So that it undermines the EIA, it overrides the EIA, and that ordinary people cannot make progressive comments, will not be allowed to because these are strategic projects. And that's our concern about this bill. No one's been really proper and informative of the consultation and how it has impacted on us. We see this year as pushing the development needs, and already in Durban we have a number of development projects being emphasized, being pushed forward. So this bill, it will override anything, and any obstacle or any objection or any concerns community are raising will be brushed aside. And we are worried about that because that's exactly the problem that we experienced in the past and that we don't want to experience again. I think what's important is that the entire bill is premised on the fact that and no one wants to say that we want jobs. I think it's clear that we believe that sustainable economic growth is important, but not the sort of growth. We believe that the jobs are important because unemployment rate is high in the country. But I think the way the bill has been written will destroy everything. And we know that you need to have a planet that is balanced. And this infrastructure bill is not going to help us in that, to get to that point. It's not going to help us to ensure that future generations are being protected. It's not going to help us to ensure that people are safe on the roads. This bill is pushing big flight routes. We have thousands of trucks on our road every day. We have thousands of truck accidents. If you just look at the figure of last year, 2013, I think it was 1,300 accidents, but the year before, 1,700 truck accidents on the road, and we still want to continue to put more trucking on the road. Our concern about the bill is that it's going to allow that sort of thing. In our communities in South Durban, logistics and freight.
Sorry, Mr. Desai, you've been really trying. I've been very patient with you. You are not helping us here. You're really general, too general, and it doesn't help the process. This process leads you to go to the bill, make reference to what you're saying. You're just making very, very broad statements and insinuations, and you're really not helping. As a result, I thank you for this committee for its members are going to find it difficult even to pursue your issues. Hence, I was trying patiently to train leaders to where you feel the bill is not, you know, helping you. So that our role is to make this bill user-friendly. Hence, we are being called here to help us. Which areas of the bill are not user-friendly? So that we can then begin to say, and try and make amendments ourselves. But with the general statement that you are making, it's not helping, unfortunately. And I don't think it's fair for us to even continue with your presentation. Mr. Buechner?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think if you look also at the main submission in the pack, it deals with a local issue, and it deals with a local municipality that you could think of. And it only has the infrastructure development bill as a heading, and the rest deals with the local issues. It doesn't deal with the bill. For example, there's references to that documents were difficult to find on the Equitani website and so on. This doesn't relate to Parliament or the bill itself. So what we really need is a critique of the current law, the clauses.
Thanks, Mr. I think what we can say to you is that this bill is text section 76. So what does that mean? It gives you the opportunity for people like you to participate through the SEOP process. After taking our report to the Parliament, that is the National Assembly, if the National Assembly agrees with it, the Speaker is then going to refer it to the NCOP, and there will be another process, there will be other public hearings called, wherein you can, through the provincial legislature, be able then to participate. I think this is the first part of it, the other part would be at that level. So I would recommend that you make good use of that process there. Otherwise, really, I'm going to say thank you very much to you for the interest and your participation this morning. And we're going to be continuing. We hope that you're going to make use of the process at that level. I'm sorry, I'm not going to give any more time. Thank you very much, Mr. Sutton. Thank you. The next presentation will be from Deboho Kebotali. I think that would be representing himself, no organization. Yes. Mr. Desai, please, may we allow him to come to the... Come forward, Mr. Dev Kimoshani.
Explained in my submission the background as to why I deemed it necessary to make the little input into this infrastructure development process. I have been to government, I participated in structures of government for the past 15 to 18 years, and I felt obliged when I saw the advent of the newspaper around infrastructure development in the country to make comments. And that obligation comes from the fact that as an individual, I am interested in building the nation. I am also interested to see the economy of South Africa grow. I am also interested in seeing the development of a responsible citizenry in South Africa. And my submission is that infrastructure has got the capacity to do all of those things. The bill, to me, is not explicit enough as regards projects that are envisaged with the southern countries. To me, it's just a general statement that talks about projects having to be embarked upon with southern countries. I think it will be important to know which projects are we talking about, for the simple reason that we will be knowing what is it that we will be doing for the development of the continent and for the development of Africa. Because we know the path, we know the direction that certain countries are taking in the development of infrastructure in Africa. But again, if you look into that provision, it borders very much well on issues of national interest. Issues that are still on a grey area at this point in time. Issues which I think must still be deliberated upon, defined and explained. As we develop the infrastructure in South Africa, to me it will be important that we learn from the industrialization of other countries. But again, that one must also be in line with the national goals. It must be in line with national interests. There are countries that are far more developed than us. And I think we have acknowledged it in many documents, in many quarters, that South Africa is still lagging behind. And it is for this simple reason that we see bills such as the infrastructure bills being processed because of that acknowledgement. To me, the bill is very silent on the role that institutions of learning are going to be playing. It is important that we develop skills in the country if you are to grow the economy. It will be important that we develop skills if you are going to develop the nation. It is going to be key that we develop skills if you are going to develop a responsible citizen. And therefore, it becomes imperative on us as planners to identify those key skills that are necessary so that we can achieve the development of the nation, we can achieve growing the economy and the development of a responsible citizen. But then these skills must be identified on a deliberate basis for the simple reason of what we want to achieve at the end. To me, the regulations relating to the bill are necessary so that we are able to close gaps which are apparent in the bill. And when we develop these regulations, they will provide a window of opportunity to consult. I have been following since yesterday there is a foul cry on this issue of consultation. I really don't understand, and it looks like this foul cry is still continuing even today. For the fact that this has been publicized in newspapers, it may not be good enough for consultation, but it still constitutes a consultation. But at the same time, the center cannot be prisoner of consultation and stakeholderism. If you are a leader, you are provided with the rights and faculties to lead, and you must therefore provide that leadership rather than to be a prisoner of you being a leader or a prisoner of consultation and stakeholderism. Partnerships are key. The bill is not saying anything with regard to partnerships. And in my view, we will be needing partnerships to close gaps on those capabilities that we do not have as South Africa, drawing from experiences of other countries or drawing from experiences of individuals who have embarked on and taken routes such as the ones we want to take with respect to the bill. Chair, the strategic integrated projects must find a way to the IDPs. Again, there is a complaint about the consultative process or the consultation process. But the bill provides for the steering committee, which is clear who is going to constitute the steering committee. And what more consultation do you want? If municipalities are going to be represented in the steering committee, what more consultation would be necessary under such circumstances, because the bill is clear on the issues. The other issue, which is very great on the bill, and like I said in my submission, the proposals are like a hallelujah project. The National Infrastructure Plan is like a project from heaven, is like hallelujah. But there are basic infrastructure imperatives that I believe must be attended to, which are backlogged at this stage, which I refer to as service delivery infrastructure projects. And here, Chair, I'm referring to issues such as electrification. There are villages today that do not have electricity, and yet we are able to plan these hallelujah projects. There are villages today that do not have stormwater. When it rains, it's hell for lives of communities for the simple reason that there is no stormwater management in the area. If you look into the taxi ranks, it's a window through which we are able to gauge the quality of life of such communities. We pass there, that's where we get our transport. Bus and taxi ranks, these are bread butter infrastructure issues. Not that I do not agree with what is being this major economic infrastructural project. Sanitation, roads, community halls, sporting and recreational facilities. Other communities don't even have bridges. To me, these are basic infrastructural needs that governments need to be dealing with, that needs to be attended to as a matter of priority. How then is government going to address infrastructural backlogs?
Can you wrap up?
Thank you, Chair. Quickly, Chair, it will be important that proposals on infrastructural development across the country be developed. We must be able to have a data bank, even if we have an eagle's eye on what we need to do in the country. It will be important to get feedback, to get proposals from communities and from municipalities. Lastly, projects in the bill are supposed to be approved by the steering committee. I have a different view. My proposal would be that those projects must be approved by the management committee. For the simple reason that steering committee can deliberate, can design projects up to a stage where the steering committee itself can approve such projects. But my view is that those projects must be approved by the management committee. Otherwise, what would be the management committee managing if they are not able to do such issues? I rest my presentation there. And thanks once again, Chairperson, for the opportunity to present before everybody. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Kali, for the presentation, for your submission, recommendations. May the members interact with this. Kali, Babu Ndau, the human, that is Ndula.
Thank you, Jefferson, and thanks for the presentation. I was just thinking that you have spoken of projects which are not included in the bill. If maybe you can assist this committee by listing those projects which you think should have been included in the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. You referred several times to gaps that need to be plugged at various levels. And one of the gaps you have identified is in terms of regulation that is necessary. That is true, that will happen. You don't indicate in your presentation, for instance, as an example, there is this gap that I believe such a regulation. Just for clarification for myself and of course for members of the committee, just one such gap that is there that is clearly could be mitigated by some kind of regulation, so that we see where you're going.
Thank you, Governor.
Mr. Pilkner. Thank you, Dr. Thank you for the presentation. You've indicated, you made mention in the presentation, maybe a possible more involvement of the local government department. You mentioned that in your main submission. We've heard over 3 days also there was some plea for more involvement of local government in the process. But if you go to the current bill, 3E, in terms of the composition, it already says that the following members will be part of the commission: the executive mayors of metropolitan councils, as well as the chairperson of the South African Local Government Association, as the main organization of the six municipalities. Now, if you've got all the metro mayors as well as SAGA's president, what more do you think should be done? Is that enough?
Thanks,
Chairperson. Presenters or the presenter have looked at the objects of the act or of this bill, why it was designed. Because I don't think the object of the bill is to replace the functions of the normal organs of the state. There is a process of ICTs, and when you look at that tool, I'm not sure whether I've got the copy of the bill, because everything is included there, the skills, they are saying practices and procedures which seeks to ensure that infrastructure development is not undertaken merely in a transitional manner, but in a manner which seeks to advance national development goals, including local industrialization, skills development, job creation, youth employment, small business and cooperative development, broad-based economic empowerment and regional economic integration. I mean, the bill here is trying to assist or undo the bottlenecks which are existing in the country. Let's say, maybe I can ask you whether you are happy with the with the pace of the infrastructure development in the country. I know the others say, no, we are not happy, it is too slow. So this bill is intended to undo the bottleneck so that the country can be able to deliver, particularly in regards to infrastructure development then. And what you are saying is there to say it will happen so that the development, I mean infrastructure development of the country can be achieved. And maybe if you go back and just reread and maybe you'll see how can you contribute to make it, to strengthen the bill so that it can be accepted to everybody. That's true.
And I think also I wanted to refer you to Schedule 1. If you can perhaps look at this and after looking at it, check whether you still hold your views that strongly, especially with regard to the issues you were referring to of normal municipal functions. This bill is talking of strategic projects, strategic infrastructure projects, which I think even the gentleman that was presenting before you, Mr. Desai, was not aware of. I think when the president launched this, I think it was in 2012, they were reaching different cities. I think there are 18 of them. And in terms of regional integration, they are there, where South Africa is going to be assisting the region, especially in terms of water, which is a scarce resource currently in most countries, and also in the region itself. The roads, infrastructure, area corridors that are going to be, constructed with the help of other countries within South Africa. If you can look at those type of things, strategic infrastructure projects, are they explicitly stipulated? And they would tell you if you don't have, I think I'll make our officials to really give you this document. It is the summary of our national infrastructure plan. It will give you all this specific issues. You still don't have time if you can organize this document for them, because it is important that you know of them. And then the municipal challenges, as Mr. Drew was saying, this bill is meant to fast-track that. As a result, if you look at Schedule 1, it also has waste management and disposal, the issues we're talking about. There, I mean, we know that most of our streets don't have the stormwater drainage system is not working well. If it's non-existent, if it's not existing, we have all those sewer web project challenges that we have. But go through the bill, understand what it says about designation of strategic infrastructure projects and how this infrastructure projects are going to be identified and so forth. I could sense that you've gone through the bill. It might be that you read in one section and not relating it to the other. Or you may be reading it but not relating them to the existing things that are happening currently in the country. So I think it is very, very important to understand what Mr. Duke was talking to, that this bill is meant to fast track. It's a kind of an intervention because the government did its own analysis of what's happening, where are bottlenecks, where things are not going right, and then it's trying to correct that through this so that infrastructure development in the country can be fast track. I hope with that you get the clarity of everything. And I think from what you have said, it's very clear that you still have certain concerns which are structural in nature, or the governance structures which I think we are taking. But in terms of the bill itself, I think it's important that we understand the options of the bill. I will give you 3 minutes to respond that Mutlali, especially on issues that we have spoken to, and then we will then close your presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe with regard to the first request, because I don't think it's a question, it's rather a request that I list the projects not included in the bill. I would assume then that I would have to, in the same fashion as I submitted, I would have to submit those through the same channel. But once on that point again, Chair, and through you with your permission, I don't know if you are going to allow me with your foregoing comments to make refinements to my submission to accommodate concerns that are not explicit in my submission as we do here today. I don't know if that would be the understanding. Thank you, Chair.
What? Quickly. Yes. We would appreciate that, Tarek, you can stop there and go back. You still have, we can, within the next 7 days, present to us those the responses in writing.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to the gaps, you know, I saw the artisan thing, and to me, the regulations must be specific as regards what FET colleges, what universities will be doing to support objects of the bill. And this gets to me, they talk to issues like, for an example, curricular development, which is intended to bring about the desired outcomes consistent with objectives of the bill. Those are the gaps that I'm referring to. So that we do not find ourselves in a wishy-washy situation because we are not defined clearly the parameters of the direction that we want to take. Those are the gaps that I'm referring to. With regard to the, I don't think the gentleman at the back captured my statement correctly, because I was complaining about people who are saying that they have not been consulted. And my view is that for the simple reason that we are sitting like this, and it's an ongoing activity, to me it represents a consultation. There's going to be provincial roadshows, as I understand. To me, that is consultation. And for simple reason that the executive mayors of the Retros, the chairperson of Salga, would be sitting in the steering committee. To me, that is consultation enough, and I don't understand why people are complaining about level of consultation with regard to the bill.
Thank you, Dr. Kibotani. I think, as we indicated, please come back to us with the rest of the submission and make sure that you meet the timeline. Otherwise, we appreciate your interest in the public hearing.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay. The next presenter would be Mr. Cesar Mabosa, who is also representing himself. But please raise your hands if you want to speak. Uh,
does after the presentation. No, Mama. Can I allow the presenter to make a point? Unless it's a point of order? Yes.
No, it's a point of order, Chairperson, because I raised my hand to speak and then you missed it. But I think it's probably a mistake. So that's why I'm writing a note to the Secretary of State.
Can you raise it high up, please, so that I can see?
No, yesterday I saw it. I'm very tall and...
Yes, I'm surprised. You don't care about the
matter? Yeah. So I'm raising it on a high note. It's just that I must raise it, otherwise it's not fair to me.
No, okay. I think I will make sure that you raise it higher, because I could see Babu Bimman, but I couldn't see you. And I wouldn't do that deliberately. That's why I'm asking and requesting that please make sure that you raise it high so that I can see it. I want every member to participate. So please make sure that I see you. You welcome Babu Maboza. May we get your presentation? I did earlier on before you arrived introduce members. Not going to do so more, but as I call them to ask questions, I will mention the name so you must know to them so that you know who is speaking. Welcome, and you can give us a presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the Portfolio Committee on Economic Development for affording me the opportunity to give a very good presentation on the comments that I submitted on the jail or draft bill. Now, the submission that I made has got some detail about certain clauses within the bill, but the main focus of the comment is the concern that I'm going to try and address in this verbal presentation. The concern is that the Act seems to be overlooking the long-term nature of infrastructure projects or infrastructure development, in the sense that it does not allow for the protection of the transport corridors over the long term between the beginning stage or initiating stage or initiative stage, which is the planning stage, and the implementation stage. My proposal in that regard was that the Act needs to address that gap clearly, the gap between the initiation stage or the planning phase of an infrastructure project or a transport corridor project and the implementation phase. Now, I was in a meeting towards the end of last year where this gentleman was presenting the alignment between the Housing Special Development Framework and the Strategic Road Network. He made a comment towards the end of his presentation that in the past, infrastructure projects were planned for long before implementation or long before the demand arose. Now, I ask myself the question, what then are we doing in the country to address the long-term nature of infrastructure projects? So when this bill was advertised, I sort of saw an opportunity to address that gap, an opportunity for us to address that gap. Now, if that gap is not addressed, there are going to be complications for the Commission during the implementation phase of the infrastructure project. If that gap is addressed, some of those complications will be mitigated and some of the impacts of the project will be minimized. Now, I'm going to refer to specific projects that within maybe the rail domain or the rail industry. There are plans that were made since the 1980s, plans to develop new railway corridors, whether it's commuter rail corridors or freight corridors. Those plans were made in the 1980s, but they were not implemented then, and some of them are not even implemented now. When the legal transition to the Transport Services Act was promulgated in 1989, it did not address the protection of those railway corridors. it did not address the long-term nature of those spending processes or the infrastructure development projects. What has happened over the years is that some of those corridors have been compromised, some of those transport corridors have been encroached upon by development and by settlement, because there is no legal status of those corridors because they haven't been properly proclaimed or servitudes have not been registered. Now, case in point. Last year, I came across a letter that was addressed to the rail agency. The developer was demanding a response from Prado, and the developer was threatening to develop the land that has been reserved over the past 20 years for rail development or for a rail alignment. Now, without a legal protection in legislation, is it within his right to develop that property, because his right to develop the property has been taken away by a plan, a future plan, that does not have any legal status. The legal protection to the Transport Services Act failed to address that. And in the amendment, when the properties, government properties were incorporated into the land use management systems of municipalities, that gap was also not addressed. So what I'm proposing is that that shortcoming be considered and be addressed in the current bill or in the act. Now, in the few minutes that I was here, I also realized that I might have misconceptions about the bill. I might be thinking that the bill or the act is going to address long-term issues. I might be wrong. It might be addressing specific projects that are currently happening. But the point I'm making is, before a project becomes a strategic integrated project or SIG project, it has to be planned. And before, between the planning and the implementation, there may be a gap of decades. Now, what happens to those corridors during that time? Are we going to wait until implementation and then deal with processes of expropriation, which might also result in the displacement of people from the land that they have been allocated for? For instance, the developer that I was referring to, he wants to build houses on the corridor. He had a development that he built and then he observed that corridor so that railway may come. But 20 years on, there's no railway that has been built. What happens if that project that is at a planning stage now, what happens if it becomes a seed project? Are we going to start with the lengthy processes of appropriation and displacing people that have been located there? My appeal is that the Act needs to indicate clearly, through three clearly articulated clauses, how the railway corridors or transport corridors are going to be legally protected so that they have a legal status. My proposal as a way forward on that is, if it is acceptable to the portfolio committee and to the people that are responsible for drafting the Act, then a relevant state agency, which is TRASA, be allowed through their legal department to jointly formulate clauses that are going to ensure that the railway corridors are protected between the planning phase and the implementation phase. I also made a proposal, which I wrote down. It relates to the identification of those projects. If the commission is mandated to identify projects and designate them as seed projects, how are they going to do that? My proposal was, with relation to the railway corridors or the future railway projects, that the municipalities be allowed to prioritize through their transport planning processes, to prioritize corridors and present them on an annual basis to the commission for consideration and review where necessary, so that at least there is something in legislation that covers the long-term nature of the infrastructure process. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. My written comments cover other details, but the main concern was
the long-term nature of the infrastructure projects that seems to be not addressed by the bill or the end.
Thanks, Mr. I think the limitation in the presentation is when it comes to the actual areas where you feel those amendments could be accommodated. The other limitation, the same wavelength actually, you're not even indicating in terms of the your input as to which area of the act or whether it's the section or the clause that you wanted to be amended, because that doesn't help us. You're talking again, it's a bit general the way you're putting things. But then I think what were you missing also with regards to the object of the bill itself? It doesn't do away with what's happening. I'm going to repeat again. It's not going to start now and redefine the Transport Act, because it is there. It's going, that is why it's making reference to the existing legislation and policy. So this is not replacing any of the legal, the legislation or policies that are in existence that are meant to govern, you know, the way things are done. It's mainly going to fast track, streamline, coordinate, and enforce cooperation and so forth. I think bring synergy where synergy is needed. So this is the purpose of the bill. So I think your presentation does give us something, but I think it also has limitations. And perhaps it will also be proper when regulations are made that you also give, you know, such input or even make it a bit deeper, so that it can begin to address those management and practical operational methods that you've spoken to. May I then allow members to come in after explaining that the final decision? Any other hand? Babu Julie? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I want to thank Mr. Mabuza for his presentation. And in the written presentation that we've received, he particularly refers to the process of the submission of proposals for lesser classification under the National Infrastructure Plan. And I appreciate that. I think it is something which we as a commission or committee will be looking at when we progress to the deliberations on the bill. But Mr. Mabuza also raised the problem of transport corridors not being kept open, etc. And my question is just, my impression is that those corridors are normally, and they have been in the past, kept open by the registration of the servitude on those pieces of land, which I presume is also then the responsibility of either Sandral, if it's a road infrastructure, if it's rail infrastructure, is probably one of the transit facilities, etc. Do you believe that that system is not working? Do we need a new one? And if so, don't you think that the changes in legislation should rather be then on that end and not in terms of this commission which this bill tried to coordinate planning and not really take over the planning process from particular entities as far as I see that? So what, don't you think that we should rather be looking at another piece of legislation? You referred to the Transport Act, etc., for those amendments. Thank you.
Thanks,
Mr. Frankie. Thanks, Jonathan. Chair, I just wanted to second your suggestion that if Mr. Mamora can transport the regulations, just to specify that we need the regulations, particularly under this clause that required. I think that we have to submit those regulations. We are not going to put
Okay, there's no other hand. May I then give you the opportunity to respond?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Firstly, to address Madam Chair's comment and Mr. Ntuli's comment, I at some stage thought that maybe amendments to current legislation could be the route to go. But then I thought to myself, if this bill is addressing infrastructure development projects, coordinating the planning of those, then there has to be an awareness by the Commission and by the Portfolio Committee that those processes are not made easier by the current status quo. If we are going to develop infrastructure and they are of a long nature and there is legislation that is currently being drafted and is going to be promulgated into an act, then maybe we need to address the gap in the current legislation. Yes, I agree that if there's an opportunity to amend the Land Transport Act or the Legal Sufficient Act, or maybe I should refer to the Legal Sufficient Act first. I think the objective of the Legal Sufficient to Transport Services Act was mainly to establish entities of government in 1989 and 1990. They were going to take over certain responsibilities within the transport services sector. And establishing the Rail Commuter Corporation, which was dealing with commuter services. Establishing the Transnet, which was dealing with freight. So the object was to establish those entities, not necessarily to address the long nature of railway development projects. Now the infrastructure bill specifically deals with infrastructure development, maybe at a coordination stage, phase or level. But it also refers to planning, identification, designation, and maybe to come in now and address Mr. Hazen as well, that I appreciate that the comment on the processes of identifying those projects will be considered. Thank you for that. Being an infrastructure bill, I still maintain, and I appreciate that the committee proposed that it be dealt with in the regulations. I appreciate that, and I will actively form part of that process, and also I will talk to the legal team of CASA so that they propose legally sound clauses or regulations that help to protect the railway resource. Now, I'm saying this being an infrastructure bill, it must not ignore, and I'm hoping it will not ignore it maybe in the regulations, it must not ignore that some of the transport corridors are not legally protected and can easily be encroached upon. In the Western Cape, there is a project that has been proposed as a big project, which is the Blue Downs Corridor. It serves one municipality. Maybe the strategic nature of that project is that it reduces the travel time and also minimizes the impact on the household income. Now, that has been protected without legal status. The landowners could have encroached on that corridor and developed it, and then we'll be facing a problem now if it gets identified as a C project, and then we cannot fast-track it like we say it would be a fast-track or facilitated by the end. The one that I refer to is in Johannesburg. It links two different municipalities, City of Johannesburg and West Rand with its local municipalities. Now that corridor
is very significant in terms of linkages and connectivities between the different segments along corridor and across the different municipalities. It is likely at some stage to become a SIG project. Now, if there is no legal protection of that corridor in any legislation, and there is no service register like is in the case now, that developer can go ahead and develop that land, and that corridor will be lost. But if there is legal protection, then that land developer or that land owner cannot develop that land willy-nilly as he likes. Thank you.
Coming to this issue, yes, Mr. Westhaven, some of the transport corridors have got...
Sorry. I think you are really repeating yourself.
Yeah.
I just want to ask you, because you're talking encroachment, you're talking the legal protection. Can you expand a bit on that without taking much more time, so that we can understand what you mean by encroachment and what the question whether you feel that the current legal system in place is not, you think it's not going to help, you know, the way it is at the moment. And then explain what you mean by the legal protection.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe first with the encroachment. Maybe before I address that, let me address the servitude issue because it relates to that. Some corridors have got servitude registered. The electricity ones have come registered servitude. But with the commuter services, the routes that have been identified or the alignments that have been identified for commuter rail purposes do not have servitude registered. They do not appear in the noting sheet. They do not appear in the surveyor in general document. They only appear in special development frameworks, which do not special development frameworks do not take any right away, and they don't give any right. They are just forward planning documents stating the strategy that the municipalities wish to take. So they only represented in those documents that do not have any legal status. That is addressing the service.
Yeah, we understand where you're coming from. Do you also agree that the bill says all these legal processes will not be lost, will be adhered to? Because the bill suggests that everything that is being done will be done in or after consultation with. It doesn't say we'll do everything and disregard everything. So I think the processes that you are talking to, it is acknowledging. If you go back to the bill, you'll find that it is acknowledging the fact that there are other legal environments, you know, that are existing and that will be. But then what it's trying to do is to cut short the process, the very same processes of applications and so forth, so that you don't take that by the schedule to prescribe in terms of the bill. That's why I wanted you to be specific, so that if the problem that you are having is with regards to that, to the time frame or timeline set in Schedule 2, or is with regards to the particular clause within this proposed legislation, where it says, for instance, it will conflict with the existing law. Please do so to tell us, because I've gone through your written submission. It's still not explicit in terms of where would you want us, for instance, to effect the changes that you feel need to be effected. So that should help a lot. I know that you, from what you're saying, from the way you're talking, you are a lot in the transport sector. You're working in, I don't know, as a consultant or in the public sector itself, but the way you're talking is like you're a practitioner in the sector. And your experience could actually help us in this, because this is what we need as a community.
You can do so now, you can do so in writing, it doesn't matter. But please be specific so that we know exactly where you want the changes to be made. And if possible, come with the draft, how you want it to be drafted, so that we can look at it and see whether we agree with it.
Okay, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'm not going to talk further. In closing, I'm just going to say my proposal was that I have drafted certain clauses that I haven't included in the presentation or in the submission. But my suggestion was that in order for those to make legal sense and to also be relevant for the CRASA, then the committee and people that are drafting the bill can liaise with the legal team of CRASA and draft those. Or I can ask them to polish them and make them to make legal sense, and then they can send it to the committee within the next 7 days. There are specific clauses that I propose that will help them address that gap that I'm concerned about.
So would you be able to send them to us?
I will.
Because we can't ask CRASA because CRASA didn't show interest in that. So we're asking you because you're the one speaking to us on that particular issue. And then do so within the next 7 days.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will do so.
Thanks, Rabo Boza, for your participation. Colleagues, there is tea outside. I don't know if you want to break for tea. And we take 15 minutes.
The next lecture will be from Institute of Municipal Engineering and A by the name of Mr. Jenny Dickinson. You are coming back. Maybe listen to your presentation today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to both observed. And so just at the outset, say I'm going to have to struggle my way through. But the next screen in front of me, so I'm going to try and focus on the screen behind you or the screen by the side of me. But this is for only reason that I'm blank. But thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to speak to the bill. And for those of you, introduce myself to some people we have, but I'm a municipal engineer with the Ukrainian Municipality, and I head up infrastructure management. Socio-economic development department, which really deals infrastructure asset management and job creation in the city. I'm also the past president, or recent past president of the Institute of Engineers. Also, I just wanted to say as an introduction, and I think Madam Chair, I have 15 minutes, is that right? So I'll have to be quick with my slides. I just want to apologize for changing the time slot from yesterday to today. I've been away on a 2 month holiday overseas and some of the presentation is proceeding in haste, but hopefully I'll get the point across. I don't have detailed information about the bill, but hopefully we'll be given some opportunity to send some more of those detailed comments to you in the next few days. I do understand that infrastructure delivery remains central to government's efforts to boost economic growth and employment creation. But what concerns me is that with capital which generates short-term employment, sustainable jobs can be created through infrastructure asset management. It is the existing infrastructure that powers the nation's GDP and prosperity. Most of it is under the ground, so people don't see it. But most of it is also controlled by municipal engineers. But I'd like to tell you about sustainable infrastructure asset management and just make a few comments about the bill. And as I said earlier on, I will make some more detailed comments later on. There's already a glitch over there.
But in our environment, of that 2 billion rand capital budget every year,
is about 2% proximity to grow our assets in annually. But my question is, what do we do about the 98%? Why asset management provides a platform for economic and social development, the cornerstone of public health and safety, and I'll go quickly through these, quality infrastructure mitigates the threat of adverse environmental events, and good assets are taken for granted by community until it fails. That was quite interesting when we had all our electricity failures. So those good assets are taken for granted by communities until it fails. If there's less major investment by communities, progressively built over a long period of time. But poor infrastructure asset management can have a negative impact on business and economic growth. The service will decline the quality of life and have ripple effect on the next generation. Public concern and protest over poor service standards is regularly noticed these days. So this picture here will probably be very familiar to you. This is a project I was involved in, a simple maintenance program. The road was shut. I was there on Christmas Day. That's a photograph of me on Christmas Day. I had to go in there, major bus route. Simple maintenance issue that was just ignored. Caused major disruption. What is our current infrastructure asset and environment in South Africa? There is a key vacuum in many organizations. Infrastructure planning and budgets for exact vendors in short term. Funding allocations are often mechanistic. There is a paucity of information and there is inadequate risk management. Implementation is cumbersome and capacity constraints are acute. Ladies and gentlemen, there is a catastrophe waiting to happen in our country. I talk from experience. As president for 2 years of the Institute of Municipal Engineers, I travelled the country extensively. Scrub shoulders of many officials in municipalities. And just 2 days ago, I was with the municipal manager and mayor in Lady Grant, and it hurts when I see the condition of the infrastructure. Its characteristics, sinister yet real, works quietly and effectively, never stops, it's like cancer. There's no respect for infrastructure, it rears its head occasionally, loves inconveniencing people, but can be managed. So what is our response? It's really general awareness, but often ignored, doesn't take it seriously, so called sense of security, reacts to its effects, rather than plans for its effects. And then we blame it for our own dismay. So what do we do first? It's not about tactical work. It's not about maintenance. And you can see the blocks over there in the puzzle. We've just, as I said earlier on, we've just done an integrated infrastructure asset management plan in our city. So we have 25-year cash flows for all our infrastructure. So I can advise the municipal manager and the council of where our biggest risks are over the next 25 years. It's a total asset management plan. You see, so often, wonderful roads being constructed, and 2 months later they come and dig up because the water lines are poor and have to be replaced, etc. We cannot afford that any longer in this country. So that's a process, and I'm not going to run through it, it's a busy slide. But it's a long process. I traveled Australia and New Zealand extensively, they're the world leaders at the moment in infrastructure asset management because they've done it for the last 35 years. So 7 years ago I traveled that country extensively, those 2 countries extensively, and I've put what I've learned over that period of time in a simple flip chart, I would like to have time to go through it with you, but maybe rather take you to another slide, to the next slide. You just decided, you see many of those processes you're going to probably fail, and then it just start all over again. So those are the processes. The first one is, what are the current assets? So this is what this F17 and this clean audit is all about. And this is what we're trying to help municipalities at the moment. So that's what you call, what they call F17. What does it require in order to service? Many municipalities have not even started thinking about what they require in order to service to you for all the infrastructure. So you can see the heart jumping up and down. That, ladies and gentlemen, is the heart of infrastructure management. Risk. Risk analysis. Risk, and I keep on repeating risk. There's no point in going to spend 80% of your effort on assets that there's no risk to the council. So spend 80% of your efforts where they are the highest risk, the sand or fall of the municipality. And I'm talking at the moment only about municipalities where you can stretch it throughout the country. And the rest is really the operations and maintenance, and then you do an asset management plan. And once you've got an asset management plan, you can then inform your capital and your revenue budget. So all these billions of rand that we spend throughout the country every year, my recommendation is put an infrastructure asset management plan together, then you do your cash flows, and then you make some very, very good decisions following that. This is what I said a moment ago, is the condition of our assets are looked at fairly regularly. There's a probability of failure, which you all know, but it's a consequence of failure. So the previous slide showed population growth. So if you know your population and you know the condition, the consequence of failure, we can measure in population number of people, we can then say, well, that's quite a high risk. But you need to understand risk. So this is an example of a slip that we had in 1930. And the bottom of the section, when we go back, the total value is 20 million. The asset cost is 4 million. The maintenance cost is 20,000. And that house is sitting on the edge, obviously has to be demolished. Why? Because we didn't have infrastructure management plans in place when we decided to build our infrastructures. So where do you come here? Some take-home messages. Asset management is critical to any infrastructure reaches. I said to the municipal manager and to the mayor and Lady Grant, I said, what are the current replacement costs of the five towns? I said, 300 million rand. I said, you are now CEO of a 300 million rand company, sir. And that's really what we need to do. Our municipal manager is the CEO of a 350 billion rand company. So how do you compare that? We are infrastructure rich business disappear. It must be done as a total enterprise. You can't do roads and ignore water or ignore electricity. You've got to do it together so that you can make informed decisions when you do your capital programs. It's all about culture change, and gosh, we've seen a culture change in our municipality in the last 7 years. Plan the change, probably get buy-in across the business. Choose what you can justify, apply the resources needed in one of the progress. So we were, a couple of years ago, or 7 years ago.
I'm afraid it's a time you had.
Thank you. Can I have my last one?
I won't have time for that. This is quite an interesting presentation. What it's really to do is to give us the exact area
don't really waste more time, but allow you to really present this with your colleagues. In that same model, we were the hostage of the movement.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think it's a very bleak sense of an echo of the arts and intelligence plans. And now we have this bill on the table. What I'm trying to grab in the case, I think this bleak picture and the bill side by side. If the bill became law, would those provisions make this picture worse or ameliorate make it better? In other words, only see the connection.
Let me start by welcoming the presentation. And let me check with if you've already given me the question. I should talk to issues raised around and the environment. I'm not sure if whether, but I feel that the presenter is having some concerns around what has been alluded to here in the bill. But I just want to take him to the section 18 and subsection 1 of the bill. That's the general issue around the environmental issues. And then Chairperson is just a follow-up for the central house. Whenever an environmental assessment is required in respect of an integrated strategic project, such assessment must be done in terms of the National Environmental Management Act of 1998, and so on and so on. So now, I just want to check with the presenter as to whether this job is not sufficient to ensure that environmental requirements are complied with. Because you need to make sure so many problems are on the
thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, I would like to find out from the what that he thinks is supposed to be changed in this bill. What do you think, which problems do you think are not supposed to be there? Or what do you think you would like to take out? If you can send us a proposal, so it's not sort of a reference. Or you submit your own to say, here I think we can proceed with it in the session. Thanks.
Thanks, Chairman. Yes. Yes, can I come just before you? Consensus is a lot to have in mind. Maybe at this point in time, going to country in terms of the infrastructure as a generation. Just to say, the country, before you came up with the national development plan,
being able to help in navigating or eradicating those challenges that elaborated through the MTP.
Thanks. I've got four questions. I'm going to flip the last slide up and anticipated some of those questions because I didn't fully complete my presentation. Big picture, yes, indeed. The first question in the connection, whether the digital will make it worse or whether this bill will make it better. Perhaps I can answer a couple of the questions in what I'm going to say now. I think, having read the bill, the introductory paragraph, introduction is just, I was getting so happy when I read it. It says to improve the summation of sub-infrastructure during all life cycle phases. That's right in the beginning, page 2. And then the rest of the document is silent on that aspect. Because that's what infrastructure asset management is about. So if you go to page 5, under H, it talks about improved planning, procurement, construction, operations, and maintenance. The management of infrastructure is not mentioned at all. This is the premise of the question. The very next item, I, says consider proposal for infrastructure development and maintenance. My presentation basically said, if you don't have an infrastructure plan, in other words, if you haven't planned your infrastructure in terms of the procedures that I've laid out on the screen, you are not going to be able to make informed decisions of when you're going to be doing that work or whether you should be doing that work. That's all I'm saying. So there is a connection, as I said earlier on, also I haven't had an opportunity to go right through it, but I can't find the word management other than in the introduction. And I'm really encouraged to see that at least it was mentioned in the introduction of my request. And the chair is that perhaps we get it under the definition and start talking about infrastructure asset management a little bit more. And then the proposed name slide that I've got over there, which are those documents that you have over there, the presentation that a few of us have put together some time ago, and we are saying that we need a national asset management steering committee, and perhaps it can flow from the steering committees and commissions that you've proposing in this bill. So the infrastructure asset management starts playing a major role. If you look at your, I think it's on page 18 or so, it talks about financial finances thereof. And we're saying there needs to be a top slice for infrastructure management. So in our city, I was this morning I was just sitting in the debate saying, well, maybe about 0.5% of our $5 billion per annum goes to infrastructure asset management. Very, very wise expenditure, because we're now making some informed decisions. The issue around environment, and chairs, is covered in the sense that if you do your infrastructure planning as proposed in one of my slides, your environmental and all the other laws, whether it deals with roads, whether it deals with the environment, whether it deals with the Water Act, it doesn't matter what it is, all those are included. So it is a total plan. Remember I showed you the slide, this is a total asset management plan. So I've now got with the third question about what has to be changed, and as far as the catastrophe is concerned, and here we are, as I said, I'm dealing with 45 municipalities in the Free State at the moment. And gosh, if they don't even have their asset registers in place, probably. The National Development Plan is an excellent document. I commented on that in my video this morning, a year ago. And I was just desperate to get to this meeting, and I know he came back from overseas a couple of days ago, just to propose that in this bill becomes the infrastructure asset management. So that whoever looks at this and whatever commission or any steering committee, that at least they have something flagged about infrastructure asset management. As I said earlier on, the stuff in the ground that needs to be managed, the 98%, not the 5% or the 2% we are building. The bill is essentially about new infrastructure, and we have to have that. What I'm suggesting is that we're in a management environment which is completely different to maintenance. From the asset management plan, you do a maintenance management plan. The reactive maintenance management, or the reactive maintenance comes out of that plan.
Thank you. I would suggest about that you please go through the bill. I understand that you have the answer, and perhaps you will get the essence of it, and then be able to make a contribution. Thank you very much for your invitation. Thank you very much.
Our interest from the blind sector in particular is around accessibility. In this regard, we suppose that the concept of universal trial and universal access must be a fundamental concept in all city infrastructure projects. We believe that universal design provides an opportunity of ensuring the barriers are eliminated before they are put in place, that there will be no need for adaptation and modification in the lifespan of a project. Universal design also provides opportunities for access to all communities. The opportunity of universal design, particularly for educational institutions, road network, rail network, has significant value on blind and partially sighted persons in this country. We are affected by a lack of access to the physical environment as a result of artificial barriers, of inadequate lighting, as well as access to information. In particular, on the road, there are four points that we wish to highlight. The first, we have covered that in the submission, but the first is in terms of definition. And definition under persons. We believe that this definition needs to be more amplified to include marginalized persons, in particular disabled people's organizations, so that it also receives the proper recognition within the law. In terms of we are really encouraged and support of two four in the road. We believe that it provides a good basis for persons with disabilities. The meaning of persons with disabilities, the South African Disability Alliance, exclusively qualified professionals with disabilities, or a professional with expertise recommended by the side of the disability sector should be involved in the policy, as well as be part of the consultation process so that the needs and the aspirations of persons with disability are in recognition in all societies. We believe that 4.1.3.4.1.C 412HA and 621 would give the access to ensuring that persons with disability are involved in that process. Madam Chair, we also believe that 413 is a very good clause that's in the law, and we recommend that that remain. The South African National Council for Blind, and I've been told earlier, believes that the participation of people with disabilities, and now in this case, people of God and also other persons are very important for there to be sustainable growth and development, and for there to be equal opportunities for all citizens, particularly in terms of South Africa having ratified the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. Madam Chair, thank you again for giving us the opportunity to present to you our concerns and our interest in this infrastructure development bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nair, for the quite clear, straightforward presentation. I'm sure that people could come and there'll be a few questions. Thank you very much, member. So we take to the presentation. I take it that you acknowledge the presentation and welcome. Thank you very much for your interest and your participation in this public hearing. Wish you well. We understand this proposal will be then processed by the committee. And we hope that this is your shall work out.
Thank you very much.
The next presentation is from the Center for Civil Society, presented by Professor Patrick Cox. Did you come with a flying car?
It's South Africa, you must start with the show. And the last film has come before about James Bond. It's what my presentation is about. Did anybody see any quantum struggles? James Bond, normally associated with British intelligence and imperialist projects, is against the CIA, against a French war crime fighter, and against a general of his friend, Hugo Morales, who was with it. So James Bond is the last week. He's on our team from Red Hound Chair, and I think he's seen the French film. I'm so sorry. Joseph. I'm going to set this some contentious terrain. For the honorable members, you'll know that in Durban, we have, as you've even heard this morning, an extremely high level of contestation over infrastructure. And I want to draw some national lessons. And also, take a case study to make three very important points. The first point is that I believe that the bill I believe that the bill Schedule 2 fast track strategy is, like Yanni told you, a disaster, a catastrophe going to happen. I'll try and make that case very quickly. I do think we need fast track basic needs infrastructure and the rethink of the SIP mega projects. I think we need infrastructure, as you do, I'm sure, honorable members in Washington, where we had three deaths this week, in Maricana, in Pittsburgh, in South Durban, where I live. Who can contest that? More infrastructure for the masses. There's not one of you in the room who would see that. And we have a third quick point to make, that infrastructure is very much related to climate change. So again, I remind you of Yanni's slide showing Mount Toki after, I think it was the 2007 wave surge, and the rise in sea level, I'll argue, is driving our infrastructure. I live in South Durban, and I will use a little bit of case study material. But the big point is that this bill before you will speed up irrational infrastructure construction. It's going to multiply our overpopulated herd of white elephants, and it's going to slow the basic need infrastructure. Because these have a lower critical priority, even though we have the highest rate of critical protests in the world. Those protesters are popcorn protesters. They pop up, they fall back down. They haven't yet developed a huge momentum of left social movements, as we've got in Latin America in the 1980s, to force municipal and national governments to do more for their needs. Hence, we have these horrible closures. And also, I believe in the South African government, there's a very conservative network, an old guard, who are climate denialists. If they were in this room 25 years ago, there would still be an old guard of apartheid denialists. Now, no, it's not a problem. And if we were here 15 years ago, there would be ACE denialists. We have climate denialists. And I believe if you pass the bill, you're going to be facilitating it. Your promotion of expeditious completion of infrastructure gives just 250 days for environmental impact assessments, public participation, and appeals. This is a recipe not for providing housing and water systems, it's for providing white elephants with mega projects. I've written about this, I think, more than any other scholar. I'll be happy to email works to create cbond@ngo.net. It's not to advertise. If you look at Federal 1, you'll find five areas that should be a completely different bill because they're so completely out of touch with the needs of the majority of people. Power stations, whose main benefit for the PhD bill is on, to get the cheapest electricity in the world. Well, ordinary people have been paying for their infrastructure, for electricity, 150% increase last 6 years. Poor folks, and after one notorious one in South Durban, oil or gas pipelines, we have one notorious one from Durban's Joburg mines, we could talk about. The resource first we have is Marikana. The airport came this morning from a big empty barn called Team Shock, way, way under capacity. Don't be a Korean. Here's Peter Bruce, the editor of Business Day. We need to ship our new mines cheaper and faster. This is the logic. Unfortunately, it's taken us to the place we are, to the profits, to go out of the country into the multinationals. And I do want you, when you do have another chance, to ask Minister Ibrahim Patel some questions. Find out what you really need, because I don't think that's been done properly, with all due respect. What were the lessons of the World Cup infrastructure, the Cochrane, the Newton, the e-calling, the major airport we have? I believe those lessons can be simply summed up in two words, white elephants. Who wins from these? Big corporates. Don't take it from me. Jonathan Sale, about 2 years ago, said, come invest in Durban, but we don't have enough to attract people. We need, he said, to keep ahead of competition, China's own imports, they don't even know when they will use. If return on investment is the line of thinking, we may never see the infrastructure. Is that a recipe for a white elephant breeding program? Recipes for the biggest multinational corporation? Is that what you, what your committee wants to do with the infrastructure bill to fast track that process? I believe that mentality has to be thought, but don't take it from me again. The National Development Plan acknowledged that South Africa's policymakers, including those who developed here, including those in the Parliament who approved here, they failed. The country did not anticipate the impact of external shocks and changing international conditions on its fortunes. Your infrastructure development bill runs the same risk, because most of it is export-oriented, capital-intensive, and very carbon-heavy. If you go to the diagnostic of the National Development Plan, we are hoping things will change. We are hoping, especially with BRICS coming on the scene, for rural studies, multilateral systems. In other words, good global governance. Have we had good global governance? Wishful thinking. We also have a thing that the rise of emerging markets will help us put in reality and increase competition and place downward pressure on wages. More factory closing, lower wages. The more infrastructure of this sort develops, like the software and force, that's the result. And what about our resources? If mining output doesn't increase and the associated rent are not extracted sensitively, then I'm afraid it's too late. These are very important problems in the infrastructure that's especially this one, very mining intensive. Development is being held back according to the diagnostic that Madam Chair mentioned. It's a good diagnostic on some points, but what you should have specified, which I have to teach you in your bill as you rewrite it to specify, the difference between infrastructure for the masses, the housing, the basic services, the clinics and the schools, the recreation in the townships and the rural areas, that's what covers underinvestment. We've had overinvestment in white elephants, in stadiums, in airports, school trains, coal-fired power station, detolling. This particular graph shows massive overinvestment in big infrastructure. Right, this is the infrastructure of the big projects with the corrupt construction companies. This is what your bill should be guarding against, but it doesn't. It's abstract. How bad is this problem? Again, if you take the most important figure in South Africa, who looked at these stadiums built for 2010, Stanley Jordan, what did he say? Not enough thought went into their plan to ensure they'd be financially viable. They are expensive white elephants. Do you want to breed more expensive white elephants by accident? In Durban, we have the most notorious because we have two empty stadiums sitting right next to each other. You may not blame that on maniacal city manager, but you need to this part of the entire cartel that's corrupt in our society, big construction companies, very opposed interests. I don't need to mention names, but I think the signs who got all yesterday for James Payne. This is the kind of fast-track infrastructure that is going to curse our democracy. We have so much of it in Durban, a whole herd of these white elephants. ICC, the shocker, they cost tens of millions of rand. And in Durban, this particular project is going to be the biggest. So you do need to pay attention, I would suggest, to the people from Fesley. Because they think we can go from 2.5 million to 20 million containers per year by 2040. And this is the National Development Plan estimate. This is insane. It's so destructive. One way, did anybody see on September 5th what happened when one of these containers came barreling down the hill? Because it isn't good to freight rail, they use the highway. And then steel kills 24 kills by the Evergreen, one of the three biggest shipping companies in the world, using a fly-by-night trucking company. Now, when you look at the infrastructure in South Africa and look at one of the most extreme abuses, for surely the Durban-Joburg pipeline comes up. That pipeline was originally 6 billion. It was rerouted from the white area of Durban, Hillcrest Hinetown, through the black area, South Durban, through Mumbulu. I would argue that Transnet has racist planners. But not only that, public enterprise minister Lucy Fowler has said about this huge escalation from 6 to 23 billion rand. This is because of systemic failing inside Transnet, a lack of sufficient depth of experience, inadequate analysis of risk. Most importantly, please pay attention to Mr. Gagaba. They had trouble securing off relations. The EIAs, the Walker and Westland firms, were not pursued with sufficient foresight and vigor. Not pursued with sufficient foresight. Don't fast track the projects. Pearl in section 2. Schedule 2. Don't, again, take this view from me. The Department of Environmental Affairs actually rejected in October last year Transnet's major step in the plan for expanding infrastructure support on ground that Transnet had not withstanding, very critical of the environment of the day, or taken on board climate. There are, as I mentioned at the outset, climate denialists. Climate denialists, people who don't believe that climate change will affect them, and they call themselves environmental impact assessment specialists. I'll name a name, ZAA Engineering Projects and Naval Architecture. When we looked at those, and you have that information in the November 22nd submission I made, they ignored this problem, the RPTI melting, which everyone is now acknowledging, especially with methane, is absolutely critical. Number one, it's going to allow these big ships to go through the Arctic. But that's part of the problem with climate change. 4% of our CO2 emissions is through bunker fuel. It's the world's filthiest transport. And that's what we're trying now to bring in to Durban Harbor. These are called post-Panama ships. And that's why the expansion is going on, costing 250 billion. 250 billion, all manner of problems, which we've dealt with in some detail in this division, especially climate. And our argument, since we look over, run up against this consultancy. When asked about rising sea levels, this consultancy last year provided data that was 5 years old, which in the field of climate science could be 2 centuries old, if that were. And this is what Transnet submitted, and that's why their EIA was thrown back in October. We've got several unanswered questions, so we won't deal with them, but because South Africa, as you see, is very, very high carbon intensive already because of our huge coal-based mining, we really have to pull down our carbon emissions. And your job, I would argue, is to have an infrastructure development bill that will facilitate low carbon, high labor intensity, import substituting development, not the opposite. Unfortunately, some of the government wants to do the opposite. Luckily, we do have civil society opposing. This is the South African Community Environmental Alliance mobilizing at the COP17, the conference of the parties to the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change in 2011. But that's because we're already learning in Durban, as many are, with extreme weather events, the kinds of problems that the worst crisis we will ever face as civilization now in its early stages confront us with. This isn't just the rich who are on the beachfronts whose houses are going under it, the shop with 30 stars and also 30 from Yali. This is for people, the people facing droughts. 9 out of 10 Africans not being able to grow food this century. 200 million dead unnecessarily because of climate change. The engine refinery where I live in South Irvine now is one example, and this is the kind of thing in just 1 minute to tell you that people are very, very concerned about the lack of oversight over infrastructure. In all the meetings, total opposition to the plan, protest merging. They have 5 steps, reverse the rezoning, mobilize policy, even the threat to have financial sanctions against Transnet because of this project. And a post-pollution, post-carbon urban. And last slide. What might you do with your vote? Drop those 5, 6 huge mega projects from the list in Schedule 1. Keep Schedule 2 if you do that. Fast track infrastructure for the people. But if you're going to make more light elephants, which some of the government want to, slow it down. Think it through. Second, reconsider the wisdom of export infrastructure that makes us so vulnerable in a hostile world environment. Third, revise the bill to promote needs-based needs as the first of long priority. Fourth, take climate seriously. Shift our infrastructure policy to promote renewable energy, public transport, less trade mobility, and to reduce smoke by Africa. And let's get a new strategy, post-carbon, post-pollution, the million climate jobs. One strategy. I hope these are some useful comments to get some discussion done. Thank you for your talks.
Thanks for the question. It's a lot. You really would like to support the other one. Thank you very much for the presentation. Remember? Okay. The presentation is open for discussion. And then those with the model with the presentation. Jesse Mohali. Bambu Bambu. Mr. Bickman. Jesse Robert. Okay, how are you? Sorry, the woman. Okay. Probably in the industrial section.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Paul. In my previous life, I used to be James Bond fan in Nigeria. And there's only one James Bond, Sean Connery, right? Thank you very much. You preempted my question as you're speaking with your last slide, and I'm glad you left it there. What happens if the fire will not drop and it's getting too serious?
Thank you, Chief Professor Wong, I think. I'm not his comments on no vision of what infrastructure is needed and what is confused, but I have to say that my impression is that infrastructure development is not a linear process, and you don't build over and you put, you know, because the numbers are not absolutely that you anticipate them to be in 10 or 15 years now. But can I just ask, it seems to me your biggest concern is at the initial decision-making level, saying what infrastructure is needed and, you know, how big should it be, etc. Wouldn't they agree that the biggest vote could achieve that once an informed decision has been taken, that the construction phase then is speeded up, that the world then would not be as mental as you, you know, fear it might be. Thank you.
I think
to live Kerala by all we consider the wisdom of exporting from Kerala to make a lot of more power to do what it is. What exactly is Kerala quality? And after I think some of the proposal of the infrastructure was to keep the serious focus on all the staff by development and improve the economy for solar. So to dismiss the level of critical projects that is for more economic efforts that are new land. I really not agree with that. I do, however, think that 20-year infrastructure obviously a country living population and that time frame is needful. And it's essential challenge that we experience that one kind of infrastructure, the TDR and so forth, that we seek room for. But I think we didn't want to, because one of the points I think that we agree is that we operate under conditions not of our own choice. We are part of the global environment. And as we have in professional the inflation, which has a downside economy, but our society is new challenge. So again, the two things that we put forward is that we have technical ability as a team to complete projects in that time. And we have to introduce that team of action as a team. Because the notion of building a capacity is ongoing and it should be, I believe that this year, help our country in the water project. So really, I think the point. Infrastructure is not a usual social activity. Where you look at it, that program is because remains in the defected. Half of things, what is proposed. That's all of them are to the master plan, economic master plan. And we need to understand what is this activity. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Well, no, very generously, the last part of the conversation talking to the paper. Because that's the beginning of the proper thing, we should make no investment in capital infrastructure. But I would like to see more of it in that sense of the kind of proposals that can improve the community of the world. But just one question, people. Is it fair to compare the ones proposed, like for example the Big Ten, which are 50% of workers? And would the construction of infrastructure that would contribute to economic development of the country? I think the two are contributing. One of them is different than both. And one of the infrastructure that the military proposes, one is going to contribute to the economic development. Thank you.
Thanks,
thank you, Chief. Thank you for the presentation. One of the key themes of the bottoms over the years was the existence of some prosperity. And it seems the vision of big conspiracies or conspiracy theories is still continuing in the bond mode that we have today. I think one of the essential terms of academic advice is always to look at the other side. And I don't think the professor read the submission made by the minister when he introduced the bill. Do you think that the communication maybe can make it available to the university? Essentially the lessons that was learned during the World Cup process. And you listed about 3 to 5 reasons why we need to formalize the fast track new framework. And that lessons really informed this goal. So I think it's a bit short-sighted and academic to assume a lot of outcomes without looking at those reasons that was given by the government. So I think the presentation must first take note also of that knowledge that there were certain mistakes made, certain lessons learned, and that's why the reason why it must be streamlined. For example, we had a presentation on Tuesday by one group based on a big infrastructure.
such development that I was going to get housing in the Western Cape. The next day, the local MEC indicated that it will take 7 years for that project to get off the ground and the principal is to be on the back. So that is the problem. You can mention in your presentation that housing is one of the most problems. And I think that's what this bill is really trying to do, to drive the process where we ensure that the basic services is being delivered to people in this country. I know there might be big projects, but I mean the executives have acknowledged that one of the reasons why we must have this one is to ensure that we don't make this mistake.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Yeah, thanks, Chatterton. So first thing I understand is it's a disappointment by the Constitution that the profession. It's like an argument to say the agency of the class should not have had it. And they are to say the good that they did to get to their own. And I don't think it's a good argument to say whenever you are looking for major development or project, it means that you are going for a higher density. And the way that we put it in. It is a different task. And, sir, I think this is the way the cost is coming. I think it's too smart the opposition of the development of the UK project. In fact, we have not agreed for the one. We have not come to a conclusion to say we must not go for bigger projects. We must just go for minor projects. We have never come to that agreement to say no, we are not going for bigger projects. Now, to come to a view and try to change the objectives of the country just by saying no, you cannot put this everywhere at least to say I have to go for the government. And as I would agree with my colleague here, Mohai, to say, we are the beginning of the government. And then the government, by going for major infrastructure, is basically to try to enhance the economic development. So that we can create jobs, so that we can be accounted as a European country. And in country, that's why you are being called everywhere for the kind of country. And if you are seeking a special and you are told that no, you know, actually go on there because then this is not your league. Maybe I'm asking do you agree that the country is taking a step to be part of the place? And if you agree, why?
Thanks, Professor Kwan. Thank you very much. I think I have also a few questions for you. And that is good also for you. I think I agree with some of your comments, which of course the country did also acknowledge in our own diagnosis of our own problem. And as a country, we believe also that we must be able also to come up with our own ways of improving, including also the issues that you may mention, especially around the our needs. I think it's not like I explained to others, the fact that we are talking of mega projects doesn't mean therefore that we are abandoning the basic, you know, projects that are meant for big human beings. We are saying in the midst of that, we did not reflect the fact that the country, the same point that Mr. Mahai has just pinpointed, that as a country, we
are level 2, therefore we need to ensure that as we compete with the developed countries, that they come to the country and not see us as also developed. We might not be at the level, but I think that where the ratio moving, once you see above, you know, at the level of those countries that you compete with, we must be also committed to bold, you know, decisions and actions that we want to take as a country. And also, I'm not sure whether for advocating for import-inclined, you know, processes or infrastructure development, what I'm saying about our own, wherein we're talking lack of development in terms of our non-medium enterprises, where we say we want to, because we believe some of those developed countries, they have to focus inwards before they could be where they are today. And that's what we want to do. Today we have most of the majority of countries that have invested in our country, since our country comes from those developed countries. And they still begin to pump up a lot of money to those companies because they want to see those companies developing even further, even though they are in our country today. So we say we need to localize so that we can ensure that our own entrepreneurs, you know, to see also themselves partaking and also participating in the global world through exploitation of their own goods and services. So if you say we need import design development, I don't know what that means in as far as our economic infrastructure is concerned. I understand you're also saying we must stop fast-tracking of projects because they may be white elephants. Of course, from the left, there are projects that are not maximally used, but I would say they are like in the environment of consent. I believe that we could still use those areas if we improve on the sorting activities in the country. And therefore, we cannot just throw out the towel and say nothing could be done to change. And hence the plans that are there currently, they might not be tied in those particular fields, but if you look at the development trends within the country in terms of the legal power and the framework and the policies that are being put in place are meant to do that. So I don't know whether that point on the business side effect that the country is trying to move, and in parallel to that, we're coming up with a fast-tracking method. To ensure that we are able to get the quick and fast, so that even the very basic needs that you've demonstrated here in terms of people, you know, boycotting, striking, wanting better services could be provided. I'm asking this because I want you in your point to focus on that. I'm going to be giving you 5 minutes more to think about the information. But I just want you to look at those issues. The fact that in the practice are going to continue with the provision of basic human needs, our other departments are going also to be continuing with provision of the normal infrastructure. The fact that we as a country are coming with mega projects to develop South Africa, develop the region and Africa in the long run, that is also quite robust to the developing and developed country in such a way that we can create it be getting such a robust and making it. Is it really fair?
majority of your honorable PhDs, and then you're asking the toughest questions, and I can see everyone's given a lot of thought. But quickly, even though these are such rich questions, I'll stress that the evidence of the last 20 years is that the drive to world competitiveness by South Africa has failed in these meetings. Just look at the World Economic Forum, the sort of the Swiss group that thinks that hospital in a couple of weeks that are going to go to the state, President Zuma. And they did this world competitiveness report, and on two areas, South Africa is pretty much number one in the world. One, actually number three, is finance. Our financial system looks really good. I assure you, do you think the bankers have put a little bit too much of their energy into making GDP, about 22% in finance, insurance, real estate? Does that help explain why our country has the highest real estate bubble in the world, four times the United States, according to the Asset Property Index, twice as high as my native Ireland, where people are total maniacs building and living themselves? Is that partly because of all the financial speculation that puts the GDP at the top of the world? But is our competitiveness in finance useful for us? I don't think so. The kind of thing we're very competitive in is the militancy of our workforce. The second year in the World Economic Forum made South Africa the number one militant, sort of the leader of gold medal for class struggle, if you will. In 2011, we were number seven. And so we're leading for our economy, the Western Gate farm workers. In other words, you've got such a militant working class. This government will have to bring out machine guns to lower our competitiveness in militancy. And maybe the premeditated marathon Africa is a signal that people are willing to do that. But I don't think in this room we want to be competitive if it means killing militant workers. And that's why I think an import substitution, perhaps I misspoke, because Honorable Chair, maybe you heard me say import intent, but that import substitution, so we don't import. Just think of the thing 20 years ago that we didn't import. We didn't import footwear, clothing, textiles, appliances, electronics. They were made in this office and in Kwazulu Natal, where I live. Those things were imported massively since we joined the World Trade Organization, Helter Skelter, Elephants, two pots. We were given developed country, not transitional status, because the U.S. put pressure on our manual system. These are the kinds of things that make me convinced South Africa can't be competitive, can't compete with Chinese footwear makers who, 2 years ago, led to 15 deaths because of environmental and work and safety and health lacking, or 1,200 people dying in Bangladesh. We can't compete with that, and we shouldn't. We shouldn't be. That's wrong. That degree of globalization that drives everyone further down has to be rethought, and infrastructure has to be rethought, so it doesn't facilitate that. In terms of the question, what are these big projects? Because you know, from not just the budget speech last year, and it will be confirmed again on February 26th this year, you know from 2012, Pervin Gordhan, our finance minister, committed 850 billion rand to infrastructure. How much of that was for housing? How much was for water and sanitation? The big bulk of those statistics went to, what are they? Those are those big coal export lines in Richard's Bay. And secondly, and we know that extraordinary damage, environmental damage and climate change damage done by that. And are we more vulnerable? Yes, the coal prices are going down. It's a pretty bad investment. And Ethereum finds itself because we're exporting good coal with bad coal and hence closer to the black side of Ramadan. Secondly, the two is the biggest single site project, the 250 billion for the German port, because I'll argue, and as well as said, the activist is absolutely rational. To come back to some of these other arguments, not all mega projects are like that. I worry that the new people will come online and be desperately needed. But I do teach you, put in the bill a cost benefit analysis. No one's going to do this. Do your ordinary constituents, or does BHP Billiton? What price does BHP Billiton pay for the 2D electricity? Is it 12 cents a kilowatt hour? And what price are you paying? You were paying 45 cents a kilowatt hour if you were over one round 6 years ago. These are the cost benefits. Let me say class analytic exercise that I hope as you get your honorary PhD that you can at least go through. These are very, very important. In the most unequal country, is that true? Are we the most unequal country in the world? The suit is higher. So we're second. Have we become more unequal after 1994? What kind of policies would this House have passed? make a perfect equality worse. These kinds of problems, infrastructure, helps pay in Bilatan to get very cheap electricity to import qualified, which is dead. Huge construction projects for the corrupt companies. Those are the projects and policies behind them that this House has passed again and again. And I think that society is now ready to defeat you. Don't do so. It may be that the World Cup stadiums were once off, and maybe we got some good tourism from it because of the panel so well. But actually, I believe in Durban. Durban goes to the 2024 Olympics, and I beg you, those of you not from Durban, put up a fight. The subsidy going for that will be Durban. I could just finish one or two others because there's so many good questions. The lumpiness of these investments. Yes, the German
airport
is very, very big. Yeah. The lumpiness problem is such that if you think through the King Shaka proposed expanding German International, everyone can ask them to expand German International. And finally, although there are so many other interesting questions, including yourselves, responded. I've read the National Infrastructure Development Plan. You can see his response to that last year. He doesn't deal with fiber-based climate. He doesn't deal with the pro-corporate nature of the project. He doesn't deal with the ongoing subsidization. He doesn't properly deal with construction corruption. So I have read that. And yet, if you consider it, these were probably casuals argued with a fast-paced path between people at the very top of this government and the capital. A fast-paced path that gave us this worst inequality. What happens, Mr. Dow, if you continue with the infrastructure development plan as it is? When Police Minister Pacheco testified in September about the state of unrest in the country, he said there were 10,399 protests in 2012-13, of which 1,882 were violent. That should give you an indication of where the society is going. And if you'd like another source, I would turn to Wallace Kidaki, because he said if we're going at this rate for these kinds of policies and projects, we can expect Tunisia Day in 2020.
Thank you very much. I don't think you should also make that me allay your fears in terms of the minister's policy or comment to ask for the votes, of course, including the issues that you raised. Because the fact is difficult, and I think also for us, I think it's really important that we keep on talking about such issues. I don't think the intention is to have this presentation to ensure that we understand both from policy perspective and also from ideological perspective of the country, of course, because we have an ideology and as a ruling party, we have to convince that what we do is not right. And we call you here so that you can be able to do so. And really welcome your input and the challenge that you have put for us. We have a break for lunch, and then we will, after lunch, we have